Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, I want to cover the topic of starting a business. March is officially National Start a Business Month, and I think it's a good time to just kind of assess our options. The unemployment rate, transitioning from one career to another, it may have been a dream you've always had. So what does it take to start a business? I've been in business for over 30 years, and one of my first jobs was working for a small entrepreneurial business. And in that business, I learned that it is as much about the personality of the owner as it is about what the business is and the customer that determines the success of that business. So the first step in deciding to start a business is definitely the biggest. It's actually going through that process of satisfying your curiosity, answering the questions that you've been thinking about, and taking that first step of researching and beginning to understand just what type of business do I want to own. Now, that first step, being the biggest, can be intimidating, it can be scary, it can be emotional, and it can be extremely liberating. Because that journey to starting your business is full of potential and it's full of risks. It's full of financial rewards potentially and a lot of investment of your time and your resources. So how do you know if starting a business is for you? How do you build a business that's going to be successful, that you enjoy owning and running, that has a great team, a great client base, and is profitable? Well, it begins with understanding just what type of business do you want to own. And then it goes through a series of other steps that lead you to opening your business doors. Today I'm going to cover those 10 steps, and let me give them to you right now. I call this as the Start for Success or Start Smart program or Smart Start program. So how you think about this is, number one, you need to identify what kind of business you're interested in starting and owning. Is it a business like you've always been working in? Are you in the restaurant industry? Are you a chef? Are you an accountant, a lawyer, a dentist? Are you a mechanic? Whatever your profession is that the type of business you want to be in? Or maybe you have a hobby and you love photography and you think, I've always dreamed of owning my own photography business. What's it going to take? How many businesses are there out there in your area that where you want to operate that do what you want to do? Who will you be competing against? How successful are they? Who are their customers? Where are they located? The second step is helping you identify the details in the industry, the market, and your customer opportunity related to that type of business you want to be in. And frequently people decide, I'm going to be in this business and I'm going to serve this customer and I'm going to sell this product. That's a little bit backwards. I think based on what type of business you want to own, your interest, your skill set, the technology, the product, whatever it is that you have, you need to take that concept and go out and look in the marketplace for the opportunity to find the customer that has a problem or has a need that's not being solved. A gap in the marketplace, or they have the problem being solved, but it's a really expensive way to solve it and you can save money. You want to find an opportunity and match your skills and your understanding, your talents, your product, your service, or your technology to meeting the needs of that customer that has that problem, that needs that solution. And so step three is to identify that problem or that need within that industry, within that market, within that business type that you're going to be able to solve and to serve a niche in that market. You're not going to try to get everyone in the community to go through your restaurant or to use your accounting business or to be your dental client. You want to find a niche of customer that needs you and needs the solution you're going to provide and that can make your business successful. Profitable and how you're able to serve that niche, that segment of the marketplace that you're going after. You can't be all things to all people, but you can be everything to some people. And this leads you to step four, making decisions about operations. That's the where you're going to operate. What hours are you going to operate? Are you online or are you brick and mortar? All those type of questions you have to think about. Step five is looking within that context of the type of business, the customer you want to serve, the problem you're going to solve, and those operational decisions that you've made, and then identifying a team, the skills they need, the roles they're going to operate in, the experience and talent you want them to have to help you be successful. And then you're going to have to pick a legal and tax structure that facilitates your business's operations. That means minimizing costs of those operations and maximizing that profitability. I like to tell my clients that profit is great and paying taxes are great on that profit because that means you're successful. But you don't want to pay more taxes than you have to. You want to pay your fair share. And you want profits left over so you can do important things in your community. You support your church, give to nonprofits, hire more people, grow your business. There's all of these types of things that come about as a successful organization that is profitable, that goes back into the community and enables that community to grow. So selecting the right structure is important. And we'll talk about some of those options in a little bit. Step seven is to identify the amount of funding and the type of funding that's there for you. Are your investors going to be Visa, MasterCard, and American Express and your personal lines of credit? We don't know. How much money do you need? What type of business? And step eight, what kind of business plan do you have? Bankers loan to people they believe in. They believe in people who have a plan, who know their industry, who know their expertise. We've had bankers talk about this, and it's important. Investors are looking at the same thing. What does your business plan tell me when I'm reading it about you, about your business, and what you understand about how to be successful? So writing a business plan is important. And then the ninth step is actually setting up that business, taking the legal steps, dealing with the IRS, dealing with the state agencies, your professional credentials, whatever it takes to set up your particular business based on the type, the legal structure, your operating location, and all those types of things. And then you open your door to your first customer. So let's go back and think about the types of business you could be in. We see in our communities retail businesses. They can be chains, they can be mom and pops, they can be specialty stores, art stores. It can be any kind of business that someone's passionate about selling that product or they recognize a need, there's a need for that product. It can be a resale or consignment store, or it can be new clothing, it can be furniture, it can be any number of things. So if you're thinking about retail, it's important to think about what type of retail business you want to be in. In that vein, you also have to decide if you're strictly brick and mortar, a physical location, or you're going to be online and only online, or you're going to do both. So there are a lot of things to think about in the retailing of your business. Maybe you're interested in starting a restaurant, a bar, a catering service. What's that going to take? What rules do you need? What regulations? There's all kinds of things to research. Businesses that are in the food segment, particularly restaurants and bars, have a highly complex thing to balance. Serving the customer, managing sourcing, licensing, satisfying the health department, any kind of complexity. And they're in an interesting business model because of the peaks, the seasons that can be there, the peak hours, up and down in a day, the cycles. And so there is a high failure rate in restaurants and bars. And so you need to consider that. If you're thinking about that, you've got to do your homework. Another option would be a technology, a software, or a hardware-oriented business, computer repair, website building, those types of things. A fourth choice would be professional services, your lawyers, your accountants, your doctors, your dentists, your pharmacists, or a skilled trade, a plumber, an electrician. And then there's all the other types of business. Who you are, what business you want to run, what your skills, your experiences, what you're passionate about. That's what you want to identify and make that connection as to what kind of business you want to own. Now, we've talked about franchises a little bit before. But franchising is an option, and we're not going to talk about that today. But that's a combination of a business in a box, a solution, something that's been modeled and proven in other locations, but still starting from scratch. And so how complex do you want your business to be? How simple do you want to start? Do you want to start completely from scratch, or are you interested in licensing something or franchising something? Understanding what you're good at, your personality, your skill set, what's important to you, and how fast you want to move, and how much money you have to invest, that lays the foundation for your success. You need to look at businesses that are already in business doing what you want to do and get a feel for what they're doing. Look at how they advertise. Look at their social media. Look at all the aspects of what you can observe from the outside. And it never hurts to try to talk to some of those successful businesses in your area. So visit actual businesses. Talk to the managers. Talk to the staff. Talk to the owners if you can. You want to lay a sound foundation for your business by studying all the businesses that you encounter that you do business with. Because it's not just about the businesses that you'll be competing against or that are in your industry or market or that serve your customers. You want to benchmark against the best businesses that you interact with. One company may be great at customer service. Another may be great at online retailing. We can benchmark outside of our industries, outside the size of the businesses, to get great lessons on how businesses succeed. You want to look at policies and standards and just everything that you can learn about successful businesses and lay that foundation in selecting the type of business that fits your personalities, your interests, and your pocketbook. So in laying the foundation, we can identify questions you need to answer, things you need to think about and you don't understand, and skill and information gaps that you have. So one thing you need to think about just is, how important is it to you to have a completely unique business that you're starting from scratch, that you want to start from ground zero? I did that in 2002. I had a lot to learn, and I learned a lot in good ways and bad that first year about what the ideal customer was, what was important to the customer, how to get paid, how to get that customer. I think the biggest lesson in my first year was not in getting the customers, because I was blessed to have some customers when I decided to start my business, but in how to collect the money that's due for services rendered. As a service company, that was a challenge, because frequently companies realize they don't have to pay for your services after they've gotten them, even if they've been valuable for that. And unfortunately, that's something we have to address in making those decisions, in choosing the type of business and how we're going to run and how we're going to operate. So there are going to be 10 things you need to think about within these 10 steps when you're going to launch the business. And so the first one is, what do you want to get out of owning a business? Is it financial independence? Is it being your own boss? Is it more free time? That one's kind of challenging to do, especially in your startup mode. Is it financial security? Is it not having to change jobs or lose your job every few years because of an industry change or something going wrong in the marketplace? What are you looking for in starting a business? That first step to defining your vision for your business is going to be critical, because that dictates what you want to get out of it. If you want to become a millionaire, then you need to make grow a business and start a business that is capable of generating that kind of income from the bottom line, from the value the company grows, from its stock, from those types of things. So if you have financial goals, if you want more freedom in your time, you're going to pick a business that enables you to be home with your kids at night, or you can get up early in the morning to do, or you're a night person and everything's at night. If you like to work on your own versus being in a social environment, you need to pick a business that matches to your personality, and that enables you to be more successful personally and happier in running that business. Owning a business takes your time, your talent, and your treasure. It takes money. And you have to have the ability and the willingness to wear many hats in that process of starting your business. It's so fascinating to watch introverted people step out of their shell when they're passionate about their technology, their product, or their business. They can be highly successful in doing that, but it's a challenge they didn't know about or even think about when they started. They might prefer to be sitting in their office or in the lab, tinkering and working on their own. But because they're passionate about that technology or that product or that service, that solution they're providing to the marketplace, they're willing to get outside their comfort zone and be the face, the voice, the marketer, the salesperson of that business. They'll wear any hat and multiple hats in order to succeed. And in starting a business, as the founder, the buck stops with you. You're the founder. You may be the inventor. You might be the manager, the marketer, the salesperson, the bookkeeper, the clerk, and the janitor. Being successful in business means you're willing to roll up your sleeves and do what it takes to be successful. You're willing to learn new skills. You're learning to recognize skills that you'll never have and you need to acquire either through an employee or an advisor or a consultant or a contractor. You may be a fabulous researcher, an engineer, or programmer, but when you look at the numbers for accounting, they make no sense. You need to develop the skills to understand every aspect of your business at some level. Not the debits and credit necessarily, but the results of those financials and how your financials should look when you make a $1 million sale that has a 10% profit. It's understanding those clues about yourself and the type of businesses and their complexity that you're looking at that will help determine your success and the steps you need to take. What trade-offs are you willing to make in the early stage? How many hours are you willing to work a week? How much money are you willing to invest? What are you willing to give up and trade off in order to spend your time doing the things in your business that you're really good at and contracting out or hiring someone to do the ones that you're not so good at? So you're asking yourself the first question, what do you want to get out of the business and what am I willing to pay to get started correctly? How much am I willing to invest? Again, the motivation for starting your business is personal, it's professional, it's financial. It is unique to each person. We might use the same concept, oh, I want independence, but the reason we want independence might differ. So understanding your motivation is important to matching it up to the right business, the right operational decisions, and all the things that flow into making a business successful. Sometimes somebody wants to go into business because they've had a particular problem that they didn't find the best solution to, or they've didn't find any solution in the marketplace and they worked in their garage or, you know, in their spare time and came up with a product that worked for them. And now they're passionate about that and they want to take that to the marketplace for people like them who had that problem that needed to be solved. So whatever's motivating you to go to the marketplace to become a business owner, understand it and understand that while people may be similar to you, no one is exactly like you. And in selling your product, it takes more than the features of a product or your passion about the product to sell that product. It takes a sound business model behind that. Are you willing to work 7 days a week? Evenings? Are you willing to work every day and never sleep? No, I'm just kidding. But in starting your business, you will frequently find that that goal of having more time with your family, more quality time with your family, more financial security, although those kind of things, depends on you investing extra time and money in that first year. So understanding that short-term sacrifice for long-term gain is something you need to think about and prepare for. A business is much like a small child. It goes from infancy, being born, learning all of those things that need to happen to learn to crawl, to learn to walk, to learn to run, to be independent adult and out able to function on its own. You as the owner will be in through those processes. Your business becomes one more child in your family to be cared for, to be tended to, and to make sure others are tending to that. And part of that process is probably one of the most critical things that people need to understand as business owners. And I call this step four or question four of 10 things you need to know about a business. And these 10 things you need to know when launching your business is online on my website, focusresourcesinc.com. So you can go there and get it, or you can email me at lee@focusresourcesinc.com for me to send you a copy of this article. But this fourth question is something that every person needs to get comfortable doing, whether they own a business or not, I'm going to say. And that's marketing and selling, promoting services, products, technology, promoting yourself. That's not bragging or being aggressive. It's being able to make the case for what your product, your service, your technology, your skill set is needed, and someone needs to spend money to acquire that. So I like to say that even when we're working in someone else's business, we have the job of selling. We have the job of marketing ourselves as a product, as a service, as a specialist. So I'm trying to decide if you're going to be comfortable marketing and selling in your business, at least in the initial phase, and while you're getting funding and you're dealing with bankers, writing the business plan, understand that you are selling your concept, you're marketing your ideas, you're wanting to get buy-in. You might want to get funding. You might be trying to get that first customer to buy your product. And so think about how comfortable you are interacting with people. Do you like people, but you don't want to talk to them? That might be a problem. If you hate making presentations, if you don't like mingling in networking events, or maybe you're the opposite end, you could sell ice to a polar bear. Whatever your personality, recognize it. You can develop some marketing and sales abilities, and you need to think about doing that, because that is a foundational thing in the startup mode of your business that the founders and the owners really need to be able to do. And I'm going to go back a step five of 10 things you need to understand and do, and that is understanding the financials, the roles of finance and accounting. How does it work? You don't have to be able to do it, but you do need to understand the core concepts and thinking of things like accounting programs or books on accounting for non-financial managers, for business owners, is really critical. I do workshops for business owners and for non-financial managers that train them to understand their financials and how their financials are going to reflect what they're doing well in the business and what they're not doing well in the business, what worked and what didn't, and how their business will grow going forward. The numbers really tell you how your business is doing. And you can be profitable and unable to pay your bills. And some people are saying, well, how does that make sense? Well, if you picked a certain tax and legal structure and you became an accrual-based business, you may have received a sale but not collected the cash. And so you're looking at profit on a sale but no cash in the bank and unable to pay your bills. So understanding how financials work, how the cash cycle of acquiring talent, your employees, acquiring inventory and things you're going to sell, translates to actually cash coming back in the business for you to acquire more talent, tools, products, services to sell to your customers. Number six gets back to that financial flow, that cash conversion cycle, because especially in that first startup process, you have challenges in getting enough customers in, getting the costs down, delivering the service at a profit, collecting all those different types of things. We need what's called working capital, money for walking around and growing your business. And you need to know where that money is going to come from as one of your starting points. Do you have a piggy bank you can raid? Investments? Your credit cards, taking a mortgage on your house, selling an asset, borrowing money from your retirement, or actually taking money out of your retirement. There's lots of different ways people fund their business, and those are steps and processes you need to think about, and how much are you willing to risk to have a successful business and make sure it functions properly. Who are you going to go into business with? Are you on your own? Or is a family member going in? Are you going in with friends or other colleagues? Number eight in this series of questions is, how comfortable are you delegating, holding people accountable, and admitting when you don't know something. So are you a total control freak? Does everything have to be done your way? Or are you good at asking for help? Are you confident in surrounding yourself with people who are talented, experienced, and know things that you don't know, that you can give them the performance criteria to perform? There's all of these different things you need to think about in formulating your team. And again, I'm going to say that article is available on my website. It's called 10 Things to Consider When Launching Your Business, Defining the Points. And that's on at focusresourcesinc.com. And there are a lot of other articles out there too. But in thinking about those 10 defining points of your business, of your motivation, of what you're willing to do, about your personal stuff, that's how you're going to lay the foundation to make the right choice as to whether to go into business, and if you decide to go into business, what type of business you go into. That helps you define the business, define your particular definition of success, identify the opportunity that matches to that you want to pursue, gives you time and understanding of what you need to do to become an expert in your industry, in the type of business you want to get in, about the products, the service, the technology. You'll get to know the market. You'll understand who else serves this customer and how possible you could team up in some form with other people to grow your business more rapidly, because they already know that customer and they're already in there. How you can get referrals, how you identify and define that ideal target customer. So this gets down to a key element of what you need to be doing in thinking about starting your business, and that's spending time researching. As I said earlier, research, research, research successful businesses around you and businesses that are in the field, the industry, and serving the customers you want to serve. Understand your competition. Look for what type of information you need. There are free resources out there at the federal, state, and local levels. There are economic development groups, trade associations. There are thousands of market research reports that I call canned reports. They're on the shelf that industries and other organizations decide we're going to research the retail industry. We're going to research bars in Chapel Hill, bars in North Carolina, banks, whatever it is you're going to go into. There are generally canned reports that give you secondary market data that you can use. And it's secondary because you're not collecting it yourself specific to your business. It's more generalized information about industry, economic conditions, things that are going on for the type of business you're going into. And that's important. It can be expensive, but it's not nearly as expensive as doing surveys and primary research for your business, which you may want to do at some level at some point, and make that investment if you need to refine how you're going to market your business and who you're targeting and what they expect from you. You can go to libraries at the universities and colleges. You can go to industry libraries like the Biotech Center here in Research Triangle Park if you're starting a biotech company. There's all kinds of different sources online and publicly that you can do. You can research databases. You can look for publicly traded companies, reports, financial reports, annual reports that they file, and look to see what they're seeing in their industry and in the marketplace in general. You want to know your market size. You want to know the dynamics and demographics of what that market looks like. Who's the customer? How do they buy? What are their ages? Where are they located? All of those types of aspects. What are the industry revenues? What's the average revenue and the average size for a business? I have a client that does HVACs, systems, and in looking at the industry information as to what size businesses are out there, what services do they provide, payroll levels. The government collects a lot of that data, and you can go out and look at that and benchmark it and enable you to know how you're going to target or compete against those companies. And competition is really critical to understand. What has been working for the competition? How big of market shares do they have? How deep are their pockets? What are their reputations? If you're going head-to-head, or even if you're, you know, indirectly competing with a business, you need to understand those businesses so that you know how to operate and how to target those customers successfully. understanding the stage of a business or an industry is important too, because large companies in your industry may have a hard time pivoting and responding to an economic issue, a change in the marketplace, where a smaller startup company may have more ability to pivot and respond to a new opportunity in the marketplace. And so understanding who your competition is and how the industry is comprised of new entrants, established companies, how the market share breaks down, all of those types of things are important to becoming an expert and understanding the trends and the features, the benefits of your industry, and how to compete within it. I frequently recommend to my clients when we're doing business plans and doing the market research to find the top 5 to 10 competitors in the market and understand as much as you can about their market share, their revenues, and their profits. That information you can get from an industry association, sometimes from the government, sometimes from news stories, just Googling a news story and getting something that will give you some indicators of who the big players are in this. Again, publicly traded annual reports will frequently contain information about competitors and the analysis of the marketplace. And it's great to be able to go out to a website and get that public information and read through it and understand what those people that have been in the marketplace, have been doing this for 5, 10, 20, 100 years, are thinking about the opportunities and the issues, the risks and the rewards that they're seeing in the upcoming year, and what's been happening in history with those companies in the industry. You want to begin to understand the terminology and jargon of your industry. You want to identify industry associations, industry forecasts and analysis. Again, those are usually canned reports that can come from an association or from an independent research group. And this last one is really critical to understand. What are the potential barriers to entry into this market? That means things like, do you need a special license? Would you need a permit? So like if you were going to start a taxi company in New York City, there are licensing medallions. There's all these processes that you have to go through to be able to be a taxi company and have the ability to operate legally in certain cities. Maybe investment is the cost of a manufacturing facility, and that might be $20 million. Could you raise $20 million in funds? That's a potential barrier to entry. So licensing, regulations, permitting, technology, there's all kinds of different things that can come up depending on the industry and the type of business you want to be in that can become a barrier. So market research tends to come as primary or secondary market research. Primary means you're doing it or it's being done on your behalf with well-written, crafted surveys that are targeted at prospects or demographics of survey recipients and respondents who meet the characteristics of your ideal customer. You might do focus groups where some of those potential customers, the people that fit that profile, come in and look up your product, your service, or your technology and give feedback. You might do interviews. There's all kinds of things you may do, but it gets expensive when you're doing it yourself firsthand. And it needs to be done by qualified, trained market research firms. I can't say that enough, because I've run into so many people that say, I do market research and focus groups, and they have no background in setting up the surveys, the language, the process, the rooms, everything that goes along with getting an objective, qualitative, and quantitative focus group. Secondary research is canned. It's off the shelf. Information about an industry in a country, in a geographic section, a market. And you get both quantitative and qualitative information. Qualitative means it's expressed in words, impressions, those types of things. It's not numbers. You can't say that there's 100% of this or whatever it looks like. It was observed. Where quantitative data is expressed in numbers. 9 out of 10 dentists recommend. Statistically, you can be told what the results are. And oftentimes you need both to get a full picture. because we're humans and we're buying. Everything we do and what motivates us in making a buying decision can't always be qualitative, and it can't always be quantified. So we need to know what other people think. And yes, it's important about what we think about our products and services, but it's more important to understand what the prospect and the customer you want to buy from you thinks and understands. So that ultimately gets down to you defining the problem or the need that you're fulfilling. What problem are you going to solve for the customer? Are you going to save them money? Are you going to save them time? Are you going to give them a better quality of life? Are you going to improve their image with a brand, a prestige brand? Are you a Mercedes or a Porsche or a VW Bug? Whatever your problem you're addressing, whatever need that is, you need to understand it at the micro level and at the macro level. You need to know the details and you need to know the big picture. Because in understanding that problem in and out, you're going to find the starting point for identifying the first customers you want to go after. You want to find customers that have the money to buy from you, that will find value in what you do that exceeds the price you're charging. You want to know what image you have to convey. You want to know how they're going to buy. You want to know everything about that problem and the behaviors of the customers that, and the amount of money they're willing to spend to solve that problem or fill that need. You do your research into existing products, services, technology, and alternatives. You can also look to see how many people do nothing about that problem because they don't have the money. You're looking for gaps that are not being served. And then you're looking at those gaps to understand why they're not served. Customer doesn't have any money. Customer won't spend enough money or doesn't value it highly enough to give you a profit. There's a regulatory reason why they can't be served. There's all kinds of reasons why an existing market is not served. You need to understand those before you say, "Eureka, I found something that I can do. It's a problem I can solve with my technology. My business can serve them." And no one is. That may be a great opportunity, or it may be what crashes your business because the people you're targeting don't want to do anything about their problem. So understand the gap, the size, the pattern, the stage, and the reason for the gap. And then research, research, research that need that customer, the alternatives that customer has. And then you're going to define your business. Let's say you're going to start a restaurant. And there are thousands of restaurants in your area. But you want to start a restaurant for people with food allergies. What is your goal in doing that? Which food allergies are you going to address? What are you going to have to do to make sure that you're meeting the standards for food preparation, for training, for being able to truly provide delicious food to customers and assure them that the allergen they have to avoid or the dietary choices that they're making are going to be satisfied with your product, with your restaurant? Define your goal as clearly, as concisely as you can, and that's where you're going to start making your operating decisions. How will you operate? Are you going to be a catering company? Or are you going to be a restaurant? Or are you going to do both? Where will you operate? Are you going to have a storefront where people can come in and order things and it's like an office? Or are you going to have a actual sit-down restaurant? Are you doing a food truck? When will you operate? What are your hours? Are you open for breakfast? Are you open for lunch? Are you open for dinner? Are you open all day? Are you open 24 hours? Where are you going to be located? What are you selling? What are you not selling? Who's in your area? Who's a direct competitor? Even when you're in a niche, people will have the option to stay home and do nothing, to cook their food. What is that customer that you want to come into your restaurant asking for, looking for, needing, passionate about? And you go through that step of how you're going to compete, how you're going to market, how you're going to let them know you're there, how you're going to gain their trust. And I like using a restaurant or a food product because food allergies in particular can kill people. If you have celiacs and you get gluten, there are health consequences. If you have a peanut allergy and you get peanuts, there are health consequences. And so food, more than anything else, I'm going to say is medical care, yes, but food is trust. If I'm going to allow you to feed me, I need to trust that you're going to do it right and it's going to contain or not contain what you say it doesn't contain. And then what type of team members are you going to need to come into that type of business to help you maintain your standards? What type of equipment is needed? How are you going to market? What's your website going to look like? What kind of menus? What kind of image do you want to project? How do you want to find your prospects? What do you want them to think of about you from the moment they walk in your doors or the moment they visit your website? How are you reaching those customers and how do they prefer to be reached? And how many customers can you serve based on the size of your location? How many seats are in the restaurant? How many times can you turn those over in a day? How many times can you serve a customer in a day and what does it cost? In selecting how to operate your business, it is as much about trust and image and value and brand as it is about the product. People do business with people they know and that they trust. They buy things that they value more than the price that's on that item. And that begins with you having a clear vision of what your business is, what it's going to do, what you want to accomplish. And that even comes down to what you name your business. And conveying in a name, a brand, an image, a connection, something that people can say, I know who this person is, I know what they stand for, and when I hear that name, Coca-Cola, Google, Apple, there's a connection there. Now, you're not going to have deep pockets in starting your business to spend a lot of money on branding. However, you will be developing a brand, a message, and an image, and you want that to be consistent from your website to your restaurant to the name of your business to the colors to everything that goes together. You need a consistent message, a consistent image, a consistent vision that you can share with the customer in the marketplace. And that means you, again, need to look internally and do a skills assessment. How are you as a leader? How are you as a manager? Are you good at planning? Are you good at executing? Are you good with numbers, the accounting, and the financial? Are you comfortable marketing your business? Are you a great salesperson? Ice to an Eskimo. Do you understand the business development process? What do you know about websites and what you want on the website? And all these other things. What do you know that you're going to need for your business and what you don't know? You're looking for the things that you're good at, the things that you're not so good at or you don't like to do, and the things you have no clue about. Because you need to fill those gaps with complementary skill sets, either through employees, other founders, contractors, vendors. There's any number of ways that you can get the skills you need when you need them. But you have to first start with a self-assessment of what you are and what you aren't. And then also in that vision of what your business is a foundation of structures and options. So if you're in business to make a profit, are you in business to make a profit for you as the owner, or are you in business to make a profit to benefit your mission or your vision? And you're going to say, oh, wait a minute, everybody's in it for profit, or they're in it for a vision. Either's fine. Both is fine if you're clear that regardless of who owns the business and its purpose, that you have to make more money than you spend. You have to be profitable and you have to have cash flow in to run your business. The first structure option you have is a nonprofit or a for-profit. I tend to think today and been talking about for-profit entities. The definition of nonprofit for a lot of people is they don't make money. And that's a misnomer. It's not for-profit, meaning that the profits of an organization do not come back to shareholders. A not-for-profit is not owned, but it needs to be profitable. It needs money coming in to fund the mission. The money that comes in, the profits that come in from operating of revenues and, you know, donations coming in excess of the cost of running to satisfy the mission, is profit. And it goes back into the mission. A for-profit is founded to make money and have the proceeds flow out to the shareholders. And from the shareholders, they make decisions as to where those profits, those distributions, that cash flow goes out to the community, either back into the business, to charitable acts, to churches, to community groups. So both a nonprofit and a for-profit benefit the community. It just depends on how that flow of income goes out to the community. One's through a mission, no owners, the not-for-profit. I call those for-profit for a purpose because, again, they have to make money, or a true for-profit company that the money flows back to the shareholders and then they distribute it and create benefits back to the community. And that gets back to legal structures too. So we have lots of different choices of what legal structure we're going to do. If we're one person, there's low risks to the business. We may want to be a sole proprietor, and we've walked through this on other shows. That means you do nothing to separate the business from you as a person. You might file a doing business as name with the county, but essentially the business and you are the same. You can do a partnership where essentially the business and you and your partners are the same. Limited liability partnerships, professional liability corporations, limited liability companies, co-ops, corporations, CSB, there's all these different types of corporations. The choice of legal and tax entity gets back again to personal choices, personal preferences, and the type of business you choose to be in. And it also gets down to how you're going to fund your business. We can fund it through debt, we can fund it through equity, and we can fund it with funds from operations. That last one, funds for operations, is where we prefer it. But in getting started, it may be 3 years or more before you have sufficient funds that on a daily basis you can meet your cash demands. Just again, because of that cash conversion cycle, because of growth rates, all those different things, it frequently takes us more time to collect our cash than it takes for the cash to flow out of the business to acquire things to be sold again. So those cash conversion cycles, if it's 30 days, 45 days, 120 days, 180 days, to collect all of the money from, say, doing a service project or doing a construction project. While we've had to outlay money for payroll, for equipment, for materials, all those different types of things, it may take a while for us to get those final payments that actually get us in the black, make us profitable on that project. We fund ourselves too with equity. As a founder, what money we put in and our time we invest is essentially our equity contribution. Friends and family may choose to invest in your company. You may go out for angels, which are high net worth individuals that you don't know that are professionally out there putting money in investments, venture capital, private equity, or you may grow large enough, or you may find the ability to be a publicly traded company fairly early at a fairly small size. And that's beyond what I want to talk about today. But those are some options for funding your business under the equity model. Under the debt model, we typically have personal debt and we have business debt. Personal debt are credit cards, equity lines, our mortgages, our secured loans, our investment of retirement accounts, those kind of things in the business. And also I want to say personal guarantees. And they tend to come along with the second type of credit or debt we have, which is business debt. When we start a business may get a loan, a credit card, but it is secured against the owner's credit line, their assets, their personal guarantee, their credit rating. And so understanding, again, even if you start a corporation and it's a separate legal and tax entity from you, in the initial stages, your financial success, your personal success plays into how readily you can collect money or get money to use to finance your business from debt sources, including bankers. And that's really why you need to understand how much money, when you need it, what you need it for, and being able to articulate that into a sound business plan that explains, I make money this way, I spend money this way, if I get $10,000 in from the bank for this, it's going to go for this piece of equipment, which will help me generate this amount of revenue, and you get the idea. So this leads us to the most critical thing anyone can do. You either plan for success or you fail to plan and you fail. Every successful business I have ever known has had a business plan. They may not always have written it down, but they've always had a plan. One of the most successful companies I heard speak about their process of getting funding. No one believed in them, even with this business plan. Well, they said, we didn't have a business plan. And yet he went on to articulate his actual business plan. They didn't have a written plan to hand to someone. But they said if they did this in a month, an amount, let's say it's $10,000 in sales, then they would be able to do X, Y, and Z for marketing. Or they'd be able to add this product. Or they'd be able to go talk to this potential customer. If they did $20,000 in sales, they'd be able to do Y, Z, etc. They knew what they were going to do and they knew how they were going to do it. And they had rules and guidelines. If they didn't hit $10,000, that meant the founders wouldn't get paid. It would mean they'd have to delay this or they needed to go talk to this person. They understood what the important things were in their business that they needed to do and the mile markers financially, operationally, marketing, sales, development. Everything was going according to that unwritten plan. I tell my customers, my clients, write your plan down. 1 page, 2 pages, 10 pages, 30 pages. Get it down and understand what you're in business to do, how you're going to operate, who your team is, what your expertise is, how the competition works, how you're going to get your customers, how much money you need, when you need it, what you need it for, how that will help you generate more money, what your growth rate is, etc. You need to be able to answer the questions and demonstrate that you're an expert in your industry, about your product or service, about your customer, and about how your business is going to operate. If you don't have those answers, then you need to work with someone to help you get those answers. Because frequently people will save the most money by developing the plan, working through the details, understanding the market, the research, the industry, the issues. And I've seen more people save millions of dollars by going through that planning and process and realizing, well, the person they wanted to go into, they don't see eye to eye with. There's no way to reconcile it. It's better to do that in the planning stage than when you've invested your money, you've opened the doors, and you find yourself fighting and arguing about how the business runs. So every aspect of your business, going through that business plan enables you to think through, fight through, plan through what you want to do with the business and see that you're all on the same page about the vision of the business, the direction, who you're going to serve, all of those details. It's better to spend the time to put it on paper and work it through than to say, well, we'll wing it and when we open the doors, we'll figure it out. You may not choose to open your doors, or you may choose to open the doors, but not with that person in your business. And now you have a plan, you know where funding is going to come from, you have all of this vision, it's time to set it up. You're going to go set up legal entities with the state, you're going to set up your tax entities with the state, the feds, the locals, you're going to get your employer identification numbers, you're going to set up your bank account, you're going to get your privileged licenses and your professional licenses. You're going to get any permits. You're going to get occupancy things. You're going to do whatever it takes to meet the requirements for legally setting up your business. And then you're ready. You're going to open your doors on that first day. You're going to turn on the phone and you're going to answer the first call. You're going to go out to make your first pitch to the prospect. You're open for business. And you're going to continue to think about your business, revise that plan, work to the plan, monitor what you're doing. You're going to market, you're going to promote, you're going to message, you're going to start building a brand. You're going to network and you're going to connect with people that can be your vendors, can refer customers to you, that you can team with. And you're going to get through that first day, that first week, that first month, that first quarter, that first year. but it's an iterative process. You plan, you execute, you check to see how you did, you regroup, you revise the plan, you fix what's not working, you do more of what works, and you build a successful business. I want to invite you to visit my website, focusresourcesinc.com, and check out all the materials on startups and new businesses, on technology spinouts, on funding your business, on how to market and grow your business. There's a 12-step article series out there that walks you from the first step through understanding business plans. It's all free. It's all there for you. And if you have questions, you can email me at Lea, L-E-A, at focusresourcesinc.com. And I would love to help you start getting the answers to those questions that we've been covering today. It's important to start smart, to start with a clear goal, to know what business you want to be in, to know what your strengths are, and to know the risks and the rewards in starting your business. And I want to thank our sponsors today, so I'm going to leave with the information. And I want to thank you again for joining me on Focus on Business. WCOM-FM and Focus on Business are proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, serving the Triangle. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is your community Make-A-Wish. To learn more about what Make-A-Wish is doing, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org. That's www.eastnc.wish.org, or give them a call at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474. Focus on Business and WCOM-FM are proud to support the Ronald McDonald House of Durham. To learn more about the Ronald McDonald House of Durham, visit their website at www.ronaldhousedurham.org. That's www.ronaldhousedurham.org, or give them a call at 919-281-1065. I want to remind everyone that WCOM-FM is a community radio station supported by you, the community members. And we have a fundraiser coming up on May 7th at the Hickory Tavern, who is hosting this for us. It's at 370 East Main Street in Carrboro. And it is on May 7th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. 10% of the food and sales totals from receipts deposited will be donated to WCOM-FM. And we hope to see you there. And until next week, stay focused on the important things.